Good day. This is Ozarks at Large. I'm Christina Thomas.
And I'm Kyle Kellums. Support for KUAF comes from the Northwest Arkansas Business Journal, featuring local business news plus topic-focused features in each edition. Subscriptions and more information available at 725-0394 or nwabusinessjournal.com.
Ahead on this edition of Ozarks, a walk around the trail at Lake Fayetteville will take you by acres of charred land. We learn the benefits of prescribed burns such as these.
Plus, not one but two area towns are in the running to take over the March Madness bracket of the greatest southern town. And we climb a tree to visit the serene world of a children's treehouse and get ready for a spring break packed with options for movie lovers.
But first, on the final day of the fiscal session yesterday, Arkansas legislators overrode a line item veto intended by Governor Mike Beebe to halt a $5 million tax break for the natural gas and oil industries. The sales tax exemption for sands used in fracking was inserted in a bill by a special language subcommittee. But Governor Beebe and others say the tax break was not constitutional as per the rules of the fiscal session. Republican Stephen Meeks represents some of the areas that are home to natural gas drilling operations. He said the veto override will benefit the industry.
I think that whenever we have the opportunity to provide clarity on an issue, it is our responsibility to provide that clarity, and that's what this special language is designed to do.
Meeks said making drilling sand tax exempt helps to better define an earlier tax break for equipment used in manufacturing. But that view wasn't universal among legislators. Speaking after the vote, Democratic Minority Leader Greg Letting said he disagrees with Meeks.
It was probably overstepping the parameters of the fiscal session. I don't necessarily have a problem with the exemption, but I do have an issue with the way that we went about it this fiscal session, and so that's why I did vote to sustain the governor's veto.
Overriding the veto only required a simple majority. The House of Representatives voted 55-41 to override the veto, while the Senate voted 26-7.
The Arkansas House yesterday elected their speaker designate for next year's regular session. The chamber selected Representative Jeremy Gillum, a Republican from Judsonia. He received 57 votes in a secret ballot, defeating Republican Representatives Matthew Shepard of El Dorado and Kim Hammer of Benton, as well as Democratic Representative Fred Love of Little Rock. Meanwhile, the House Republican caucus voted Representative Ken Bragg of Sheridan to be House Majority Leader next year.
The Arkansas Highway and Transportation Department has suspended a number of construction projects originally scheduled to be awarded next month. According to the Highway Department, the suspension is a result of uncertainty regarding federal aid reimbursements available from the Federal Highway Trust Fund. Federal transportation officials have reportedly projected that the trust fund will run short of funding as early as July of this year without congressional action. The 10 suspended highway projects are spread across the state and have a total projected cost of $60 million. The projects range in scope from work on a city street in Mulberry to widening and rehabilitating portions of several state highways.
The Ozark affiliate of the Susan G. Komen for the Cure announced its grant recipients for the next year. Money raised through events like the annual Race for the Cure at the Pinnacle Hills Promenade go toward 12 local organizations providing screening, education, and treatment to uninsured or underinsured women and men in the organization's 10-county service area. This year's grants total more than $670,000 and will be split among organizations like the Arkansas Department of Health, the Community Clinic, Hope Cancer Resources, the Madison County Health Coalition, Mercy Breast Center, and Mercy Foundation Fort Smith. Grant awards will also go toward the North Arkansas Partnership for Health Education, the Skaggs Foundation in Branson, the Merlin Foundation, the Women's Center at Sparks, and to Washington Regional's Breast Navigator Program and Cancer Support Home.
The U.S. Department of Housing and Urban Development yesterday awarded $1.8 billion in grants to public housing authorities across the nation. The grants are intended to build, repair, renovate, or modernize public housing facilities. Arkansas received about $16.5 million of HUD grant funding, while 13 housing authorities in Northwest Arkansas and the Arkansas River Valley collectively received more than $1.8 million.
The Children's Emergency Shelter in Fort Smith is also receiving funding to help defray renovation costs. The organization announced yesterday it received a $50,000 donation from First National Bank and Brown Hiller Clark & Associates to help fund a three-part expansion project at the shelter. The donated funds will be used to convert the garage of the shelter's home on 14th Street into an advancement office and community conference. conference room. The renovation will help the shelter raise community awareness of its mission and provide additional space for private counseling and tutoring of the shelter's clients.
The Razorback baseball team yesterday gained its second shutout and third sweep of the season. Arkansas completed the midweek series against Grambling State with an 8-0 win at Baum Stadium. The Razorbacks are now 11-7 on the season, and they continue home play this weekend against Alabama.
Clear tonight, lows in the lower 40s. Tomorrow, slight chance of evening showers and thunderstorms. Highs tomorrow afternoon in the mid-70s. And for Friday night, mostly cloudy, 30% chance of showers or thunderstorms. Lows in the lower 40s in northwest Arkansas tomorrow night. And in the Arkansas River Valley, 50% chance of rain. Lows in the lower 50s. This is Ozarks at Large. Dale Bumper's stamp on politics in the second half of the 20th century is a bold one. He guided Charleston, Arkansas, to be the first school district in the South to integrate while he was city attorney there. Later, he served as Arkansas's governor and was elected to four terms in the U.S. Senate. Consider the names around his career. He defeated Orville Faubus in the 1970 gubernatorial primary and Winthrop Rockefeller that year in the general election. He was succeeded in the governor's mansion by first David Pryor, then Bill Clinton. And he defeated J. William Fulbright in the Democratic primary for the Senate in 1974. The collected papers of his career were formally opened at the University of Arkansas Library yesterday, finishing a three-year process that resulted in the cataloging of more than 1,000 boxes of papers. University of Arkansas Provost Sharon Gabbard says it's fitting the papers are at Senator Bumper's alma mater, in part because of his commitment to higher education.
Dale Bumper's understood the relationship and the correlation between research and scientific advancement. If this country had the highest quality of life in the world, it was because it also had the highest quality of research. He understood how important government research dollars were in curing childhood illnesses such as polio, hepatitis, measles, and mumps. Senator Bumper's interests were also closely rooted in the land, how we care for it, what we grow on it, and what we provide for prosperity.
The provost estimates Senator Bumper's was responsible for more than $80 million in funds directly benefiting the university and the state of Arkansas. Senator Bumper's couldn't attend yesterday's formal opening of his papers, but his longtime political colleague and friend David Pryor was there and remembered a speech delivered by Bumper's in the Senate just after Senator Bumper's had retired. It was the closing speech of the Clinton impeachment trial.
Dale was called back into service after he had just left the Senate. He had only been out of the Senate for about 3 weeks or 2 weeks when his colleagues called him back to make the case, the final argument, in the Bill Clinton impeachment trial in the Senate. Barbara and I were traveling, but we got back home just in time in Little Rock to turn on C-SPAN, I guess it was, and watch Dale Bumper's give that wonderful oration. And I can still quote from memory some parts of it. I will not do it now. I hope you will avail yourself of the opportunity to go to the archives and let Tim Nutt play you a rendition of Dale Bumper's speech in the impeachment trial. One thing I do remember, though, that immediately upon the completion of that speech from Little Rock, I kept trying to call Dale Bumper's home in Bethesda to tell him what a magnificent job he had done. Finally, after the lines were busy all of this time, I finally reached Dale. He picked up the phone about 10 o'clock at night, about 9 o'clock that our central time in Little Rock. And I said, Dale, this is David. I just wanted you to know that this was perhaps the finest speech ever given on the floor of the United States Senate. He responded typical Bumper's fashion, I'm inclined to agree with you. So that was his response to my accolade that I was trying to send his way.
The papers include notes, letters, legislative drafts, and correspondence. Tim Nutt, the head of special collections for the University of Arkansas Libraries, says every word, photograph, and item was inspected, cataloged, and annotated. He says there is history in each volume, from the end of the Cold War to the effort bumpers led to save the Manassas battlefield from development.
Also in the collection, you can find materials on Star Wars. No, not the movie, but the Strategic Defense Initiative proposed by President Reagan in 1983. Throughout his tenure on Capitol Hill, Senator Bumpers logged hundreds of hours in service on committees, and his time there is represented well in this collection. There's even some material on one of the senator's first legislative victories, Right Turn on Red.
A collection such as the Bumpers papers also includes three-dimensional objects, what archivists term ephemera. This collection includes shovels from groundbreakings, plaques, and other commemorative items. There is also a pair of red and white shoes, a pair that would only be worn by the bravest of Razorback fans. Those shoes are explained in another piece of the collection.
While organizing this collection, we came across a letter from President Bill Clinton to Senator Bumpers. In 1997, Clinton wrote, "I can well recall cooling my heels in your office, waiting hours on end to heed the wise senior senator's always honest and often blunt counsel. I'm still upset about your not selling me those wonderful red and white patent leather Razorback shoes I'd try on in your reception area."
David Pryor pointed out that a discussion of the career of Dale Bumpers is incomplete without also talking about Betty Bumpers, the senator's wife and the founder of the organization Peace Links and a strong advocate for health issues.
Public health, vaccinations for every child in Arkansas, and ultimately around her kitchen table in Bethesda, Maryland, the formation during the bleakest times of the Cold War. The war, a worldwide organization of women dedicated to talking to one another, listening to one another, and reasoning as women and mothers rather than shooting at one another. This was Peace Links, and it was Betty Bumpers' concept of bringing peace to a very troubled time in our world. It was highly successful. This was Betty Bumpers' partial legacy.
Although Senator Bumpers was unable to attend the Wednesday afternoon event, he did write a letter that was shared by Archie Schaefer, a former staff member for Bumpers during his time as governor and senator.
"The bottom line is this collection is so much more than papers. It is a study of what I worked on, and even more so of the times in which I served. You won't find much on email because email didn't exist until my final few years, and Twitter was only what birds did. Although times have changed rapidly since I left the Senate, my years there were some of the most dramatic in our country's history. The Vietnam War ended my first year. Nelson Rockefeller was the newly minted vice president after Spiro Agnew's resignation, who swore me into office. 5 months prior to my swearing in, Gerald Ford had succeeded to the presidency after Richard Nixon's departure. Although I did not realize it at the time, I was living a major sea change in our country's history. My collection contains my vote on the Panama Canal. It was very controversial and helped shape, rightly or wrongly, the outcome of the 1980 elections. I could reminisce further, and if I were with you in person, I'm sure I would. I will close by stating my belief that collections such as these are important because they are windows to the past and help us better understand how we got to the present and what is possible in the future."
The formal opening means researchers, scholars, and reporters can now have access to those papers. And the collection joins others in the U of A special collections, such as the papers of Joe T. Robinson, David Pryor, and the first woman to ever serve in the U.S. Senate, Hattie Caraway. This is Ozarks at Large.
In just over 20 minutes, we climb a decades-old Norfolk pine in this month's installment of our Locally Made series.
We tucked it right up in among these six trunks, and you can see we've just got a really nice, simple, kind of old-style treehouse ladder leading up through a trap door in the floor, some hand-carved stairs that, you know, just kind of blend into the trunk. And so this one especially, we really let the tree dictate the design.
A visit with the man behind Natural State Treehouses ahead on Ozarks at Large.
There's a park in North Wales outfitted with unusual playground gear for kids.
Children are playing with old tires, they're playing with hammers, all kinds of sharp tools. They're building fires.
And no parents in sight. Unusual? Hannah Rosen takes on playground norms and overprotected American kids on the next All Things Considered from NPR News.
Listen this afternoon from 3 to 6 to 91.3 FM.
This is Ozarks at Large. Plenty to talk about when it comes to jobs and the economy in Arkansas, including changes to the state's workforce program, raising the minimum wage, and the governor's quick action closing fund. Our content partner, Roby Brock, recently led a roundtable discussion of business and politics with Arkansas Economic Development Committee's Grant Tenniel, Scott Inman, and Janelle Lilly from KATV. It was all part of Roby's television program, Talk Business and Politics with Roby Brock.
Well, I want to talk about AEDC's, the changes that are coming to the workforce program after the compromise to secure the 27th vote from Senator English. So tell me a little bit about what we can expect those changes to look like and when they'll start.
Well, first I want to give Senator English a whole lot of credit. This is an issue that she cares deeply about. She has run the Workforce Investment Board in a past life. She has worked at AEDC in a past life. She has been concerned about this for a long time and saw an opportunity with the uncertainty around the private option to move an issue forward that there's very broad agreement on. There just hasn't been the political will to get the funding done. So she seized her chance and managed to pull together commitments for about $15 million from various sources, some of it coming out of existing pots dedicated to workforce at the Workforce Services Agency, some of it coming in the form of new one-time money from the governor to really get focused in a few different ways. One of the things that we know, we have a lot of different people in a lot of different organizations engaged in workforce development in the state. A lot of it's duplicative. Some of it isn't as strong as it needs to be, and we're trying to do too much in too many places with too little resource.
Are there 30,000 jobs, though? That's the number that keeps getting thrown around.
That's what the chamber has been saying for quite a while, that they think there may be as many as 30 and maybe a few more. Jobs available in Arkansas that can't be filled because workers lack the skill. Well, this pot is going to enable us to say, okay, boys, we've got the money now. Tell us where the jobs are. Tell us what the skills need to look like, and we're going to train people specifically for these jobs. We're calling it the Fast Track Program because we're hoping that it's going to present an opportunity for a fast track to employment for a number of Arkansans.
Let's talk about another topic that just wrapped up with this fiscal session right here, the Quick Action Closing Fund for the state of Arkansas. This has kind of been a pot of money that the governor's been able to use for to incentivize companies to come here. That balance is down to about $6.8 million right now. There was no additional funding put into the Quick Action Closing Fund. What are you going to do about that? Well, how does that hamper your ability to recruit jobs to the state?
Well, we had asked for an additional $5 million out of the surplus. And at the end of the day, there were legislators who felt very strongly that we can't spend all of next year's surplus now. There were, we're projecting around $120 million in surplus. There were requests in for about 90. So some things had to go. And there were a few key items that there was broad agreement on. The two that really impacted the Quick Action Closing Fund money more than any others were broadband in schools, which I'm a huge supporter of and very much behind, and told individual legislators in meetings that I really think that getting that right can have a greater long-term economic impact on the state than any one project that we can do.
And what was the other thing?
The other was the charter school facilities funding, which has, fans and detractors on both sides of the aisle. But because the Waltons had put this challenge forward and said that they were going to match at least some of it, there was a whole lot of impetus to to go ahead and take advantage of that match.
What are you going to do, though, if you don't have money to compete against Texas or Illinois or Florida or someplace for a project that's coming here if you don't have that quick action closing fund money?
I think that, we're going to have to get very creative. And I'm worried about it. I'll tell you, I'm worried about it right now. The one option that we have that we're going to begin to exercise, there is an amount of money from the Quick Action Closing Fund that has been promised to projects over the course of the last, some of them, you know, a few years old now. And for whatever reason, the companies haven't moved forward on the projects. We've kept the commitment. It sits in the
You're going to ask
box.
For the money back?
Well, what we are going to do is begin to communicate to those companies that we need to see a plan for how you're going to spend this money beginning in this next fiscal year. And if you're not ready, we may deobligate that money to you and come back in the 15 fiscal cycle when hopefully we'll have more money and make those obligations again.
Now, real quick, I know you're concerned with bringing higher paying jobs
right.
to the state, but I do want to spend a little time on talking about the lower paying ones.
Sure.
There's a proposal to raise the state's minimum wage right. from $6.25 an hour over the next 3 years to $8.50 an hour. That proposal may make the ballot. Do you have a stand on that?
Well, you know, it's funny. I had a canvasser show up at my house yesterday afternoon and knock on the door and ask for my signature, and I signed it. I'll sign almost any of them because I think the people deserve a chance to vote on these sorts of things. I think that there is a lot of benefit behind raising the minimum wage. You will hear from some companies that say it will be a job killer. Mm-hmm. But what creates jobs is customers. I mean, people talk a lot about job creators. The ultimate job creator is a customer with money to spend. That's how jobs get created. And if we can put more hands or more money in the hands of working Arkansans to go out into the economy and spend it, that will create jobs. Corporate profits over the last few years on a nationwide basis have been at record levels.
That was Roby Brock, Steve Inman, and Janelle Lilly speaking with AEDC's Grant Tenniel. Support for Talk Business and Politics on Ozarks at Large comes from Bank of the Ozarks. Committed to helping business owners succeed by combining the tools and services businesses need with accessible experience and knowledge. More information at bankozarks.com.
And the Electric Cooperatives of Arkansas. Diversity is the key to reliability and affordability. From the state's largest industrial user to a home at the end of a long country road, the Electric Cooperatives of Arkansas serve members with a stable supply of electricity backed up with fuel diversity. More at AECC.com. And the Arkansas State Chamber of Commerce and Associated Industries of Arkansas. ArkansasStateChamber.com for more information.
This is Ozarks at Large. I'm Christina Thomas.
And I'm Kyle Kellums. In about 5 minutes, Woolsey Wet Prairie is on fire. But don't worry, it's for a good reason.
First, the Fort Smith Convention and Visitors Bureau is seeking nominations for its annual Giving Recognition in Tourism, or GRIT, Awards. Nominations are due in writing by Friday, that's tomorrow, to the Fort Smith CVB by email, mail, fax, or in person at 2 North B Street. To nominate finalists, write the selection committee a description of why you believe this person or organization has earned recognition for their work supporting Fort Smith tourism. For more information, 783-8888.
Florida-Georgia Lines, This Is How We Roll, Summer Series 2014. That's a music tour, in case you didn't know. We'll kick off May 30th at Arvest Ballpark in Springdale. The concert will feature special guest Nelly. An opening act, Chris Lane. Tickets go on sale 10 o'clock tomorrow morning at Ticketfly.com. If you'd like to know more about the concert, you can go to NWANaturals.com.
The Sea Chanters will perform a free concert at 7 p.m. March 22nd, that's Saturday, at Alma Performing Arts Center. The United States Navy Band Sea Chanters Chorus is the official chorus of the United States Navy. The ensemble performs a variety of music, ranging from traditional choral music, including the sea chanty, to Broadway musicals. They're under the leadership of senior chief musician Georgina L. Todd. The sea chanters appear throughout the United States and often perform at the White House. Although admission is free, tickets are required, and you can reserve up to 6 per family. Details available at almapac.org.
And speaking of Saturday, the City of Fayetteville Animal Shelter will be closed Saturday in order to complete work, refurbishing, and flooring. Plans have been approved to remove old vinyl tile from the entire front area of the main shelter building. According to a news release from the city, the current tile has been there ever since the building first opened, and it's being removed for both sanitary and aesthetic reasons. The Fayetteville Animal Shelter has adopted more than 200 pets since the beginning of this year. The shelter also offers an income-based spay and neuter program for city residents, as well as microchipping services for the general public. More information available at 444-3456, or you can go to accessfayetteville.org.
The animal shelter actually posted a picture of the cutest kitten that was available yesterday on their Facebook page. It's a 3-month-old kitten that came in with a bunch of injuries, and she only had one eye.
Oh.
But she was super cute.
I bet she gets adopted.
Yeah.
Hi, my name is Paul, your host for the Generic Blues Show, which airs every Friday night at 9 o'clock. Join me this Friday. I've got some new music from Tommy Castro and the Painkillers and Dave Keys. Also, Billy Branch, Gina Cecilia, Andy Cohen, Big George Jackson, and more. Again, that's the Generic Blues Show every Friday night at 9 o'clock. We'll see you then.
It's that time of year, like it or not, when foresters and conservationists burn the land. But as Ozarks at Large's Jacqueline Froelich reports, prescribed burns help to both restore native habitat and mitigate climate change.
Woolsey White Prairie is on fire. Hawks careen through the smoke after fleeing field rats, while leopard and cricket frogs in surrounding ponds call out concern. This prescribed burn is good medicine for this prairie, says Bruce Shackelford. He's president of environmental consulting operations based in Benton. He's responsible for turning this 50-acre degraded cow pasture back into rare Ozarks and native wet prairie, an effort that's taken years.
This is the 7th burn at Woolsey Wet Prairie, and among the benefits of prescribed burning, it gives the native warm season plants, which is what we want out here, it gives them a jump start. And so they will start emerging sooner, and they will actually put on a much more dense growth than had the site not been burned.
Woolsey Wet Prairie Sanctuary was set aside a decade ago by the City of Fayetteville as part of a compensatory mitigation agreement to offset the taking of 10 acres of wetlands to build Fayetteville's new West Side wastewater treatment facility. Most native prairie in Arkansas and the United States has been plowed under for food cultivation or development. Amazingly, parts of the old Woolsey Prairie parcel were still intact. But due to lack of fire, invasive plants, and draining, the critical habitat was dying. So Bruce Shackelford set about restoring the wetland, first by building water catchments and sloughs and removing woody scrub. A strict schedule of beneficial herbicide applications and prescribed burns followed. And early on, he coordinated a baseline plant survey, which in the following years has exponentially grown with the emergence of long-absent native prairie plants.
It's been almost miraculous. Coming from 47 plant species in that initial baseline characterization to the most recent species count of 431 plant species.
Seeds smothered for decades under a dense mat of Bermuda and tall fescue. Early on, the city was going to pay a contractor to broadcast native seeds to encourage diversity.
For over $150,000 for a contractor to come in and plant some of these very expensive prairie seeds.
Instead, relic seeds, scarified by fire, deep in the soil, took root. This morning, a 3-man fire crew conducts the control burn, setting small flank and back fires before igniting big head fires. Pockets of dense underbrush flare, then subside. Thick brown smoke curl from dark orange flames up into the blue, windy sky.
Oh my gosh, the global warming, the greenhouse gases, we're putting more carbon into the atmosphere. indeed we are putting carbon into the atmosphere with this prescribed burn. But there are numerous research studies that have shown there is a net loss of carbon in the atmosphere from prescribed burns on prairies, even if you burn those prairies every year. And what happens is, the way that prairie responds, there's a much, much enhanced density of growth. And as we know, plants take in carbon dioxide. What they do is they fix that carbon into the soil as organic carbon, and it takes it out of the atmosphere.
Prescribed fire in optimal conditions produce much less smoke, and routine fire regimes on prairies and certain forests also reduce the risk of incinerating fires, which can bake soils. And reestablished tall grass prairie grasses like Big Blue Stem grow up to 10 feet tall with roots that reach 12 feet deep, serving as highly productive carbon sinks. Within weeks, this charred ground will turn into a carpet of lush perennial grasses and blooms. In recent years, Woolsey Wet Prairie Sanctuary has become a conservation destination. On nice days, dozens of families can be seen hiking and birding here. Ardent Woolsey Wet Prairie fans are also posting observations and photos from their expedition. For example, Ozarks wildlife biologist Joe Neal uploaded a magnificent image of a mother Osage burying crawfish and her young, photographed during a recent nocturnal slog. Bird surveys have been conducted here, and now a formal herptile survey has commenced. And a new documentary, Woolsey Wet Prairie, After the Burn, is in the final stages of completion for a possible broadcast on public television. For now, you can watch it on YouTube.
Thousands of years ago, man used fire as a management tool. And today we're coming full circle, because in nature, fire brings forth an abundance of flourishing life to what little is left of North America prairies.
In the spring of 2011, the National Wildlife Federation certified Woolsey Wet Prairie as a national wildlife habitat. And last summer, Arkansas Audubon designated the prairie as the state's 32nd important bird area. For Ozarks at Large, I'm Jacqueline Froelich.
If you'd like to learn more, you can look for Woolsey Wet Prairie on Facebook or go online to ecoarkansas.com.
Wind chimes clink high among the branches of a Norfolk pine as traffic moves below on Lafayette and Fayetteville. I stand about 12 feet off of the ground in a treehouse built by local craftsmen with natural state treehouses. Josh Hart is the owner and main guy when it comes to building these quality and sustainable play structures. Now entering its fourth year, Hart says the spark of the business came when he and his wife wanted to build a plaything for their two young boys.
We started looking around and realized there's just, when it comes to play structures, there's nothing available that's, you know, everything's either very expensive or very low quality or more often both. And so we kind of said to ourselves, gosh, you know, somebody needs to start making, you know, sustainably built, really fun play structures for kids. That kind of planted the seed, and then a few months later, you know, it really kind of clicked for us that we've got all these carpentry skills, you know, are connected to some wonderful local carpenters. We should do that. And so that's kind of the start of the business.
He stands next to one of his completed tree houses, not far from the busy street. Though it is hidden among the pine's branches and is difficult to detect unless you're really looking for it. It's been completed since October, and I drive down this street almost every day and have never noticed it. They believe this tree to be a Norfolk pine, but it has many unusual characteristics, and it's thought to have been an experiment of the horticulture department at the University of Arkansas, as a former president of the school once resided in this home. At its base, the tree has a wide and thick trunk, but about 2 feet off of the ground, the trunk separates into six trunks, growing into different directions. Hart says the intent was to be up above the street and hidden.
And so we tucked it right up in among these six trunks. And you can see we've just got a really nice, simple, kind of old-style treehouse ladder leading up through a trap door in the floor. Some hand-carved stairs that, you know, just kind of blend into the trunk. And so this one especially, we really let the tree dictate the design.
He approaches each project differently depending on the tree, the location, and the customer. Hart says he will spend a lot of time just walking around a tree, looking at it, taking it in. And more often than not, the customer has some ideas when coming into a project.
This family actually had crayon drawings from the youngster and all kinds of good ideas. But then I'll take those ideas and work on a design, and we'll just kind of go back and forth until we get the perfect fit.
On this particular task, the platform was built with 2 feet on the ground, though two beams were attached to limbs first, and then the platform was fixed to them. Hart builds treehouses for customers of any age, some as young as 1 and 2, some teenagers, others completely grown. For the younger ones, the design is something that can be used immediately, but something that cannot be outgrown. This particular customer is 5. Federal guidelines for playground safety are followed, though he says he overbuilds everything. Hart sets a threshold of 8 feet for the height of his treehouses, because he says that's where it starts to get really fun.
It feels high, and it feels like it's a totally different world, especially for kids. And so this one, actually, we were looking at the lowest limbs are starting at about 12 feet. And so we looked at the canopy of the tree, we looked at those first limbs, and you'll see when we go up there, but it's the perfect height for this tree to feel like you're inside the tree, like you're right up there in the branches, sky above you, foliage all around you, and then, you know, being right here off of downtown Fayetteville, being right there having a perch to kind of get up away from the busyness of the world and have your own space.
Climbing up into that space is relatively easy. A small platform has been installed in the crotch of the tree to ensure stable footing, as hands grab onto wooden dowels that make up the rungs of the ladder. Small enough for little hands to hold onto, yet strong enough for the heaviest of feet. A pulley system hangs over the edge to pull up any necessary supplies so that the climb can be completed with 2 hands. Up through a small hole in the bottom of the platform and you're there. A trap door falls over the hole. Working around what the tree provided, Hart and his small team did not harm any living branches in the building of this house. In fact, there are many holes in the floor and the wall to allow limbs to grow through. Those in the floor have rope enclosing them.
That's just a nice little touch. It helps it feel more like an enclosed room, you know, and fills in the gaps. But yeah, we use this. It's a wonderful natural fiber synthetic rope, same thing that we use for climbing.
Hart uses primarily Arkansas-grown cypress wood for his crafts. He says cypress is a magical material. It has the great properties of redwood or cedar, but can be found locally. The sawmill he procures wood from uses sustainable practices just a few hours east of Fayetteville. Cypress is also resistant to insects for those sticky summer nights spent high above. It is also flexible, which is necessary for building a treehouse to allow for tree growth and movement with the wind. The late winter winds were blowing something fierce, and a swaying could be felt as I stood. Hart says that the best activity for enjoying a treehouse is to just go off into your own world.
Probably the one thing that every structure that we build has in common is some kind of private space, you know, where whether it's a kid or an adult, you can go get away from the world, be by yourself, you know, clubhouse, fort, whatever you want to call it. It's just magic for all ages. You know, this particular structure has just a rustic old style plank wood swing, climbing rope. Climbing activities are fabulous, you know, build strength and you know, just great for kids getting outside and exercising and having fun. And anything that you can imagine, just depending on what the customer is looking for.
I spy a wonderful place to curl up with a good book. Hart works on projects all over the region, from Searcy and into Missouri, and has even taken phone calls from as far away as Las Vegas from people with an interest. Small or large, off-ground or on, can be done. Customers began to take notice of Hart's eye for detail and superior workmanship, and began to ask for his help on other projects just a few months ago. A side business evolved from those requests, and he now manages the Craftsman Cooperative Natural State Carpentry, with members who are local cabinet makers, furniture makers, and makers of custom instruments.
So really anything to do with wood, we formed this cooperative so that when folks come to us and say, you know, we want really high quality work, you know, done with sustainable practices, that we kind of have all those connections to, you know, if it's not something I personally know how to do, I'm connected with some craftsmen that have those skills.
Hart himself is taking part in a project not far from this treehouse on Lafayette. A deck is being built on Hill Street off of the glassed-in porch of a house with a foundation that dates to pre-Civil War. To learn more about Josh Hart's projects, visit naturalstatetreehouses.com. This is Ozarks at Large.
Next time on Ask Me Another, we talk with Lego sculpture artist Nathan Sawaya about his largest, most intense work to date.
It is a Tyrannosaurus Rex skeleton that measures over 20 feet long. I used over 80,000 bricks.
Oh, nice.
That's what gets the girls when you say 80,000 bricks.
Join me, Ophira Eisenberg, for NPR's guiltiest and most puzzling pleasure.
That's Saturday at 11 a.m. on 91.3 FM.
It's Thursday, March 20th, 2014, the last full day of winter. This is Ozarks at Large. I'm Kyle Kellums.
I'm Christina Thomas.
With us, Becca Martin-Brown, features editor at Northwest Arkansas Newspapers.
And coincidentally, we shall talk about spring break.
Sweet.
Makes sense.
And what some of the libraries are offering.
Oh, they offer so much.
And I really want to run away and go. Starting Monday, the Fayetteville Public Library will have a spring break movie marathon for families at 2 o'clock every afternoon. So if you're looking for any of us, I'll be there.
We'll be across the street.
Any ideas what kind of movies?
I know, in fact. Monday is Wings. Tuesday is Percy Jackson, Sea of Monsters.
Wait, Wings, like the silent movie, the first one?
No.
It's Pixar's Wings like Cars. Yeah.
Okay, sorry. I was going to say that was the first ever Oscar winner, and it was a silent. That would be a very odd choice.
It would be, but no. Wings...
Cartoon.
Cartoon. Lots of fun.
All right.
Endorsed by my daughter.
All right.
Tuesday is Percy Jackson, Sea of Monsters. Mm-hmm. Wednesday is Frozen, which you haven't seen it. Hie you to the library and see it. On Thursday, Snowflake, the White Gorilla.
Don't know that one.
And on Friday, Cloudy with a Chance of Meatballs 2.
All right.
There are also three films for teens at 5:30 that you might like better.
Okay.
Tuesday is Logan's Run.
Now, that's the original, right?
Yes.
Okay.
Wednesday is Mad Max Beyond Thunderdome.
Okay.
I know Mad Max.
And Thursday is The Hunger Games Catching Fire.
Those are slightly different than the others, yes.
All right. At Rogers Public Library, they have a movie on Thursday. Actually, a movie marathon, Beauty and the Beast and Ratatouille, starting at noon. And at the Springdale Public Library, they have a movie on Wednesday, the end-of-the-month movie, which just happens to coincide with spring break. And it happens to be Cloudy with a Chance of Meatballs, too, which I haven't seen.
Becca Martin-Brown is features editor with Northwest Arkansas Newspapers.
This is Ozarks at Large. I'm Kyle Kellums.
I'm Christina Thomas.
Have you filled out your bracket?
No. I'm not a basketball watcher.
I'm not talking about basketball.
Oh.
I'm talking about the greatest southern towns bracket.
I saw this on Facebook.
Yes, Garden and Gun, which is a magazine devoted to the South, a few years ago started doing brackets. They admit piggybacking off the success of the NCAA basketball tournament.
Why not?
Right. But they don't use basketball. A couple of years ago, they used Southern food. So this year, it's greatest Southern towns. And
we have a few in our region.
Yes. Bentonville. They're broken into regions, just like the NCAA bracket in the what is called the West South. Bentonville is a first-round opponent against Marfa, Texas. Hot Springs is a first-round opponent against Bridge, Louisiana, and Fayetteville is a first-round opponent against Monroe, Louisiana. All in good fun. You know, it's not really talking about what's the better town. But I did think that I would talk to the editor-in-chief, David D. Benedetto, and he mentioned this is not the first bracket that Garden and Gun has put together.
And in the past, we've done food. 2 years in a row, we did Southern food, and 1 year, shrimp and grits beat barbecue, which had many people, you know, ready to jump off a bridge. Last year, we did Southern food brands, and you know, that was a great one too. And so, what we try to do is pick a topic that Southerners are passionate about. And I can tell you that we knew towns would be popular. I had no idea it would be this popular. It has been it's been an amazing buzz happening around it, and the traffic on the website is unreal. It's been pretty wild.
How did you pick the towns, and how did you pick the matchups of the towns?
To pick the towns, there was a lot of back and forth between the editors, writers. You know, send us the towns you think are the best in the South. We decided that we would cut them off at 150,000. Population. We didn't want to go too big, and we needed to cover, you know, all of the South. We wanted to be geographically diverse, and at that point, you have a whole lot of wonderful towns, and we only had 32 slots, so we had to whittle down, and that was a very hard process, trying to get everyone represented, yet you know, filling out the bracket to make sense.
Well, and I love some of the matchups because there's one, Bentonville, which of course is in our listening area and the home of Crystal Bridges Museum of American Art, against Marfa. And Marfa has this reputation for being this small but incredibly eclectic artistic town. So it kind of made sense that Bentonville and Marfa are a first round matchup.
Yeah, absolutely. And you know, every first round matchup is not as perfect as that one, but that one is one where it was, you know, it came up, yes, that's going to work. Two great towns, two very passionate, well, towns with very passionate folks and great stuff going on. I mean, the Crystal Bridges Museum and the happening in Bentonville has been, you know, we're hearing so much about the buzz in your area about that and sort of the revival of the art scene. It's been great. And obviously Marfa's had its connection to the movies and its art scene as well. So those two pairing up against each other felt just right.
All right. What I love, what I think is brilliant about this is people will try to tell you they don't care. This is meaningless. It's only how many times does someone go to a website and vote until their town is involved. Then suddenly it gets serious.
It has gotten serious real quick. You know, we've certainly there was a newspaper piece that ran in a Chattanooga paper about why they, you know, they were upset that they weren't included, and they weren't included because they just hit they were over 150,000 in population, and you know, Chattanooga is a great town, but yes, the passion is running very deep and hot.
Well, one Facebook post that caught my attention said, no offense to Monroe, Louisiana. No, it said, Fayetteville may not be a number one seed, but no offense to people in Monroe, but it's definitely a 16 seed. Come on, people.
Well, you know, that was the other thing, right? You just like the tournament, and some of the matchups are like that. You have a heavyweight versus a lower seed, and not to say that there can't be a Cinderella. I mean, there certainly can be, just like the real NCAA tournament or bracket. And Monroe, you know, this is Garden and Gun. Part of our DNA is sporting and the outdoor lifestyle.
Right.
And Monroe has some unbelievable, great sporting opportunities, and you know, it has some positives there too. So it, you know, again, an interesting pair up. But you guys might be favored.
Well, as you and I speak, Bentonville is leading Marfa because once you vote at gardenandgun.com, you can see the current tally, and Bentonville is leading Marfa. Hot Springs has the edge over Bow Bridge, Louisiana. But in what could be an upset, Monroe, Louisiana, is leading Fayetteville.
Yeah, you know, I checked right before we got on the line together, and I was a little surprised by that, too. So there is time. there is still plenty of time for people to vote. And, you know, it's interesting to see how it'll turn out.
Now, what happens to the champion?
You know, the champion will be crowned, you know, the greatest Southern town, and or at least the winner of our greatest Southern towns bracket. And, you know, there's a good chance that we'll cover it maybe in my Ed letter in an upcoming issue because, you know, the response to this has been so great. I don't want it to end here, and it would be fun to talk about it in the print edition itself. But, you know, this isn't about the best Southern town. I mean, it is in terms of who what's going to win, but it's about – the fact that we have such great southern towns. You know, we have wonderful towns in the South, and we have people that are so very passionate about those towns. And, you know, you could do this in the Northeast, but I don't think you would have the kind of passion that you have for this.
Well, what I find very interesting is I've been to Athens, and I love Athens. I've been to Key West, and I like Key West a lot. But there's some of these towns. I have never been to Franklin, Tennessee, or Fairhope,
right.
Alabama, so
right.
Something's got to be good about them if you've put them down here.
Yeah, absolutely. And I'll be honest, I certainly haven't been to all these towns. You know, we tried to weigh what we knew from reporting and learn from folks who had been there and get the best list. But hearing folks talk about these towns that I haven't been to certainly makes me want to go. I'll be honest, I've never been to Fayetteville, but I know now that you guys, you know, great barbecue, great college. You have an SEC football team, great Southern history. I mean, it sounds to me like a wonderful Southern town.
David D. Benedetto is the editor-in-chief of Garden and Gun Magazine. Voting for the first round will be conducted through the end of Monday. You can vote at gardenandgun.com.
Hello, I'm Robert Ginsberg, your host for Shades of Jazz every Friday and Saturday night from 10 till midnight. And that's Hank Mobley in the background along with George Benson on the guitar. We'll hear music from these gentlemen along with Charlie Parker, Oliver Nelson, Bill O'Connell, John Pizzarelli, and much more. Tune in this Friday at 10 p.m. for Shades of Jazz.
KUAF is supported by the fully remodeled and expanded Walmart Museum, a family-friendly experience featuring interactive displays on the history of Walmart, Walton's Five and Dime, and the Spark Cafe Soda Fountain. Located on the square in downtown Bentonville and open daily until 9 p.m., including Sundays. 277-8493 or facebook.com/Walmart Museum for more information.
This is KUAF 91.3 FM, Fayetteville, Fort Smith, Bentonville, Charleston.
Charleston.
Home of Dale Bumpers.
Okay, there you go.
Yeah.
Ozarks at Large is a production of KUAF. I'm Christina Thomas.
I'm Kyle Kellums.
I'll be back actually tomorrow with Antoinette Grajeda.
Filling in for me. Thank you very much.
Yeah, you're going down to Hot Springs.
I am.
Okay, have a good weekend.
Well, thank you. You too.
Earlier this week, Riverfest in Little Rock announced the third round of their lineup for the event, which will be held May 23rd through the 25th. Musicians that they announced earlier this week will be The Fray, The Wallflowers, and country singer Easton Corbin. They will join the list of performers, which already include Chicago and Salt and Peppa. Half-price weekend tickets go on sale April 1st at Walgreens nationwide. Another round of musicians will be announced next Tuesday. So today we will end the show with The Fray's song, How to Save a Life.
Step one, you say we need to talk. He walks, you say sit down, it's just talk. He smiles politely back at you. You stare politely right on through. Some sort of window to your right. She goes left and you stay right. Between the lines, fear and blame. You begin to wonder why you came. Where did I go wrong? I lost the man. Somewhere along in the bitterness. And I would have stayed up with you all night. Had I known how to save a life. Let him know. After all, you do know best. Try to slip past his defense without granting any.